This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM, 92.5 FM in McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 up in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln. And our website is CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. And as you know, we're brought to you by you. And if you would like to make a donation, we could use your help. You can make a donation by going to CatholicSpiritRadio.com, our website. Or you can call in 807-2427 as area code 309. Again, that's area code 309, 807-2427. If you would like to make a donation, and we would hope that you would do so. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we both want to wish you all a very, very happy New Year and also a Merry Christmas. We're still in our Christmas season, and I'm going to turn the show over to my wife, Lynn, for now. She's going to talk about the Solemnity of the Epiphany and also a little bit on St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, an American saint. So I'll turn that over to Lynn, and you can go ahead and talk about that topic, Lynn.
Hi, all the listeners out there. Hope you're keeping warm. We've really had fantastic weather, I guess, if you look at it in one way, over the holidays. But I kind of miss the snow on Christmas Eve. Really enjoy that. I wanted to mention today that it is still, as Bob said, the Christmas season. Liturgically, the Christmas season ends with the baptism of Christ, which will be in a couple weeks coming up here. And after that, we go into ordinary time. And that will happen in 2 weeks. And it'll be the 19th, Sunday the 19th. But until then, we're still the Easter season. And it used to be that people didn't take their decorations down until at least the Feast of the Epiphany.
You're talking about Christmas season, you mean?
Christmas.
Yeah.
What did I say, Easter?
You said Easter. You're good. You're already anticipating Easter. It won't be that long before it's here again.
No. In fact, Ash Wednesday is coming up the 26th of February.
Wow.
But it happens so fast, it seems like. Ordinary time sometimes seems to drag on, but not the special seasons, especially the Christmas one. It seems to go by so very fast. But it used to be, and in some countries and in some ethnic groups, Christmas, the big celebration is not on Christmas. It's on the Feast of the Epiphany. It's a big day for a lot of people. And I know in Russia, it's a real big day for those exchanging gifts and stuff. This is the day they do it on, the Feast of Epiphany, which is January 6th. But this year, it's going to be the solemnity of it will be on January 5th, Sunday the 5th, which when you're listening to this, it will be January 5th. So we'll celebrate the Feast of the Three Kings. The Three Kings brought three gifts to Christ. You remember what they were?
I know what they were.
Well, what were they, Bob?
They were gold.
Yes.
And frankincense.
Right.
And myrrh.
Right. Do you know what they symbolized? Gold symbolized the fact that he was a king.
Absolutely.
And nothing but the best for the king. The frankincense, you know what that was for?
Well, frankincense is incense.
And what properties of frankincense that make it so special? And that it's used in many religions. The fact that when it burns, it burns aroma and everything goes straight up. And it symbolizes our prayers and praise to God go straight up.
Well, it was used in Jewish.
Exactly.
They incense the altar with it. We still do in the Catholic Church today.
That's right. So, and that's the reason they brought the incense. It was a symbol to praise to the newborn king. And the frankincense and myrrh, the myrrh, you know what that was for. They used that for embalming, well, not embalming, but preparing the body for burial. It was anointed, more or less, the whole body. So it foretold the whole the whole coming, you know, with this child, this infant, was going to go through in his life. He would be the king, and he would also die for that. So that's what we keep in mind with the three kings. It's a long story. The 4th of January, Saturday, which is today, we're recording late Saturday, is the feast of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. She was born of wealthy people in colonial America. She married, they had five children.
She was from Maryland, wasn't she?
Yes. And she had five children. Her husband went through some hard times. They lost their fortune, and he developed tuberculosis and died. And after his passing, she converted to Catholicism and became the founder of the Sisters, the Daughters of Charity. And they established the first parochial Catholic school system in the United States. And that's what she's remembered for. In the Epiphany Parish, there's a statue there of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And she's standing with the book in her hand and her cross, the crucifix. And at her feet are the state flowers of Maryland, which are
Black-Eyed Susans.
Black-Eyed Susans. We had discussion this morning whether they were mums. They weren't. No, they aren't mums. They are Black-Eyed Susans, state of Maryland.
Yeah, I think, well, at least the Black-Eyed Susans, I think, are sort of members of the Daisy family.
Daisies. Yeah, Bob first said daisies. Then we came to the conclusion, no, they're yellow with a brown center. But she was an American-born saint, one of the first that was canonized. So that's what's going on this week in the liturgical calendar. And we'll celebrate the solemnity. And I have a hard time with that word. I don't know why. Solemnity.
You said it okay.
But anyhow, we celebrate that this week and the Epiphany. I think every week I'm going to go over what's going on in the liturgical calendar.
I think that's a good idea. We can introduce for, you know, because it's a good idea that as we go through the year, we're starting out with the new year, it'll be perfect. So we can start out and go through the whole year and name those things and seasons and times of the church as we go along.
You know, the liturgical year is really a wonderful thing to follow. That's what the prayer of the church is, the liturgy of the hours. They follow the liturgical year. It goes in that pattern. And many religious people and religious orders, well, they don't think of the national holidays and so forth. It's marking time like the 4th of July and so forth. It's these feast days that their life is centered around. And I think it's kind of comforting. So I'll let you get on with what you're doing, Bob.
Okay, well, what I'm going to talk about, we're going to start off the year with something a little bit more serious as we go along here. I just couldn't resist this. I saw this article in the current Catholic Answers magazine. And it's by an author, Anthony Esselin, and I've done articles from him before. And it's just what's going on in our country. I think we need to call attention to it. It's not just in our country. It's going on in the world. It's a part of modernism, and talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to talk about this article and a few others, and I think they're all related to each other. And we'll have a little discussion along those lines. But the title of the article is A Mother's Madness, A Culture's Lie. And it says here, most of our readers will have heard of the little boy in Texas, James Younger, whose father has been fighting in court to prevent his wife from subjecting the boy to the surgeries and hormone treatments necessary for him to pretend that he is a girl named Luna. To open up the flesh of this case is to reveal a seething mass of cancers and diseases. The father is no saint. This was his third marriage, annulled on the grounds that he lied to his wife about his education and his military experience. He was discharged from the Marines for homosexual behavior. He and his wife manufactured the boy and his twin brother in a glass dish via in vitro fertilization. The boy, at age 3, can be seen on a video telling his father that he, quote, is a girl because he, quote, loves girls, and that mommy puts him in dresses and paints his fingernails. Now imagine this at 3 years old, the boy saying that he's a girl. Now, this didn't pop into this boy's head.
No, it didn't, but there are still three-year-olds that don't distinguish their sexual behavior, and my point is, how could they make this decision?
Well, they couldn't, and he wouldn't have. Obviously, he was coached. But at any rate, that's the whole point. Mama puts him in dresses and paints his fingernails. So it's Mama who is making decisions as to what he should be. And so when he says he's a girl, he wouldn't know whether he's a girl or he's doing what Mommy tells him to do is what he's doing. And why wouldn't he? At 3 years old, he doesn't know any better except what his Mama tells him. And he says, Mommy, Esalen goes on and says, Mommy and Daddy are pieces of work. But of the two, Mommy is the one set upon doing irreparable harm to a mere child. Would a mother castrate her son? Bad people do bad things, and it is not a new thing in the world that a parent should use a child to exact vengeance upon the other parent. But we are dealing here not with ordinary evil. We are dealing with breathtaking insanity. According to Don Innes, writing for Forbes magazine, Luna was given the name James at birth in 2012. And like her twin brother, now notice the word her twin brother, presumed to be male until 2016. Notice that in our culture now. This is what doctors, people at hospitals, nurses, educators, you know, people supposedly of science and intelligence are doing, that somehow or another it is a presumption as to what you really are. So she was presumed to be a male until 2016. And Anthony Esalen says, presumed to be male? And he says, look at the boy's face. That's a boy there. And I'm looking at the picture that's included here in the magazine, and there isn't any doubt. He's a cute little boy. You can tell by looking at his face. It's a boy's face. The shape of the face, the jaw, even the thick hair that can give boys the look of a perpetual cowlick, all mark him out as an ordinary boy, what at least once was considered an ordinary boy. What was not ordinary about him? Nothing. Nothing but a brace of bad parents with a mother who evidently put in his mind that he was a girl, grooming and coaxing him, and certainly doing nothing to bring him gently into reality. In a sane world, even within recent memory, she would lose custody of the child for the cross-dressing alone. In a sane world, doctors who mutilate children, cutting off healthy organs, would lose their licenses, and they would be practicing in prison. Medicine aside, what has been done to this boy's soul? He has been fed lies. James Younger is not a girl. He can never become a girl. Who will tell James the truth? Who will tell them that if his mother continues in her vicious path, he will grow up to be a physical and emotional freak? Not a girl whom a boy might love, not a boy whom a girl might love, but something neither flesh nor fowl, unable to beget or conceive a child, and attractive only to a few people with dreadful problems of their own. It should never have come to this. It would never have come to this in a normal world. In that world, the boy would be brought up as a boy, doing chores alongside his father and building up his muscles and bones that will mark him as a man. Indeed, when James is not with his mother, but with his father and his twin brother, He seems to drop the pretense of being a girl, and he is a boy among boys, as he should be. Even if James should change his name to Luna, he will still be a male and not a female. It is not a white lie to call him she. It is a lie that attacks the heart of God's most sublime creation, man in his image and likeness, male and female. God is not the father of confusion. Do not take your cues from him who is a liar and the father of lies. One last point. Christians may soon need to fashion a new underground railroad to support people publicly or privately who have been persecuted by the new ruling class. Meanwhile, pray unceasingly and do not concede one inch of territory. Now, isn't that something?
Yes, it is.
An article like this.
Who would believe it? Who would believe that you would indoctrinate a child to believe this and then to do what they propose to do? I would suggest the word in the name Luna applies to the mother. And in the old sense of the word, Luna, you know what that means, loony.
Yes, it meant at one time influenced by
the
moon.
It's not the kid, it's a mother.
Yes, it is. And the fact is that, you know, who would do this and why would a culture go along with it? This is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this a little bit more when a culture descends into pure materialism and see where it goes. So stay with us. We're going to take a break here, but we'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere, and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about an incident concerning a young boy who has been sort of so-called transformed into a woman by the thinking of our current culture. And I want to go a little bit further with this. You've heard the story that I just talked about. This is being normalized all over, and I want to compare this to something I was watching on television that I think is a good thing. I was watching on the news that was talking about the fact that some new cosmetic laws have been passed, at least here in Illinois, and those laws are regarding what can be done to animals concerning cosmetics. And, of course, there is animal experimentation in medicine and in other areas of our culture in which great benefits can be, you know, gained for human beings. But something simply to make us look nicer or smell nicer, I agree. I don't know the whole thing of this article, but the gist of it or the central portion of it, the idea that we certainly are responsible for this planet and should, you know, be good conservators of it, and we shouldn't be mistreating animals when it, you know, isn't necessary to do something that, you know, must be done for the good of human beings. So avoiding using animals in ways that would be, you know, dangerous to the animal or hurtful to, just to provide us with cosmetics, you know, to enhance our looks or whatever the case might be, not something that is really needful. I think that, you know, this is a good law. Most likely, at least the intent is good, and I hope the law turns out to be good. There could be, you know, some negatives to it we don't know about. But nevertheless, the point is that we are concerned with protecting animals from unnecessary, you know, pain, unnecessary suffering, and unnecessary mutilation. And that's the word that I think even was used, unnecessary mutilation. We shouldn't be doing this. And yet, what are we doing here, Lynn, in this case to a young kid that could be subjected to operations that would take away his manhood and actually, you know, cut away or destroy healthy, normal organs that the child was born with, under this idea that somehow or another that our gender is a matter of what we think or a matter of our mental state or something else, and that it can be changed from one thing to another, you know, at somebody's desire. Now, you know, this is what I'm getting. What, you know, the question I'm asking here is what kind of society, Lynn, would protect animals from this kind of thing but not protect their own children?
Paganism. First thing that comes to my mind is paganism and the absolute disgust with the doctors, the parents, the doctors, the law, anybody that would take a perfectly healthy being and mutilate it. There's no excuse.
Exactly. And to go along with this idea that somehow or another that things, the forms and so forth that are up for grabs, that we can change something simply because we think it's so, that the material world can be changed by our whims and our desires and our thoughts.
And, you know, they have no basis to stand on because it isn't this child's will. He's too young to have any concept of what right from wrong and whether he is male or female. I think that's set in your mind a little bit later as you develop.
Of course it's not in his will, but this is this whole idea that gender somehow is nothing but a social concept and a social construct. Everything somehow is a construct. And when you talk about it, it's exactly what you're talking about. It is a descent into paganism. And when you leave the teaching of the very church, the Catholic Church that built Western civilization, that is, that is based on a transcendental God that stands outside and above the universe and defines and declares the universe that we live in, and that is what is a given to us. When you step outside that and come back inside this idea that religion is man-centered and is anything that man wants to make it, you descend into this abyss in which identity becomes fluid. And that's exactly how pagans lived. They lived in the idea of the idea that one thing could be shifted to another, that animals could turn into humans and humans could turn into animals. And yeah, it was a world of darkness, and it had no place for science. And this is what science itself is descending back into, this whole idea. And mentioning science, I want to go into this a little bit. I was reading also about a Methodist split in the Methodist Church over LGBTQ, gay rights, that is, in the church. Some of the more, you know, modern thinking, if you want to use that word, Methodists want the church to recognize the LGBTQ so-called community as having, you know, the ability to be pastors and so forth and ordained and all of that kind of thing. And there are others in the church that want to stick with the teaching of the Methodist Church as it is, that's not possible, that homosexuality and these other things are against the Christian religion and they're not to be ordained as ministers or anything in the church. And so it's causing this split. And there was in this article, a reference to a person in the Methodist Church who speaks for the side of the, I think this person is a pastor, is ordained themselves, and speaks for the side of the gay rights. And this person says, nothing about sexual orientation should exclude you know, the LGBTQ from being ordained. And this person points out that biblical passages are not up to the modern understanding that is the so-called scientific, and the word here is used, scientific understanding of gender and sexuality as it's known today. In other words, the biblical texts are old-fashioned. They were written back at a time when they did not have our modern understanding of gender and sexuality. And the person goes on and says, Jesus loved everybody, including the marginal. And so somehow or another, Jesus would have accepted all of this, and it would have been fine for these kind of people to be ordained into the Methodist Church. And I would like to ask a couple of things. First of all, this person invokes science. And just exactly what is the scientific information that we have learned since those biblical times that says that people can transform from one gender to another? I would like to know what those psychological experiments are, and I would also like to know what those material experiments are that have proved this to us. Who were the scientists that concluded those experiments? Where were they done? And, you know, what is the evidence from those experiments to show that science has answered all of these questions? None seems to be provided. There just seems to be this asseveration, this assertion that somehow or another we moderns have all of this knowledge that somehow was not available to the ancient peoples. I guess they were just a bunch of people who weren't able to take advantage of all this modern knowledge now that we have. Well, I haven't heard any. In fact, I would like to know if the human DNA in people somehow can be changed in every single cell, that somehow a human being can be transformed from one sex into another. And I would also like to know if this happens automatically, or does it have to be done to someone? And if someone asks for it, what would be the reasons that it would be granted and given in the first place? And I don't think there are any answers to those questions. I think these assertions are just that, plain old assertions, and simply someone who is pretending that they are more intelligent and more knowledgeable than anyone else. And when you ask them hard questions that they can't answer, you get all of this looking down at the nose at you as if, oh, well, you just don't really understand our modern thinking or understand the modern world. No, I guess we don't. And it goes to show that when you launch into a deviation from the standards that built Western civilization, you begin to see Western civilization being destroyed, and you also begin to see the possibilities of the viciousness that can come about with the loss of that religious knowledge and a loss of that religious unity. And again, you have this same thing that goes on. I hope it never happens, but it seems to be bordering on happening in the Catholic Church, is this constant splitting up into one denomination and then another denomination and this group and that group, because there is no transcendent authority outside and above human beings. In other words, it's a man-centered and a human-centered church.
Yes, and I saw online this morning that the First Methodist Church in Normal, I believe it's one on School Street, is going to allow the LBG, opening up to the LBG community. And they're offering those that don't want to go along with this thought, the Methodist, I don't know what you call it, the church council, you know, or that governs all of the Methodist churches in the United States, is offering a startup funding to those in the Methodist faith that do not go along with this. They can leave and start up their own congregations. So that there's going to be another, you know, that's opening up to another split.
So in other words, Christianity becomes whatever you say it is.
Right.
Or whatever any particular...
whatever you, at the moment.
Whatever any particular group thinks that it is. And the idea, again, of this pretense. The fact is let's look at it from a different point of view before we get off this particular topic and go into, you know, another here a little bit. There is, I would assert, there is no possible way that a male can become a female or a female can become a male. You cannot do it any more than you can get into the identity of a bat or a dog or a cat. You can pretend that you are a bat. You can think that you know what it is like to be a bat. You can come to believe even that you know what it is like to be a bat or a cat or a dog or something else. And you can then act on that belief and act out an imitation of a dog or a cat or a bat or something else. But since you are not one, and you can't ever get into the mind of one, and you can't ever get into the skin of one, and you can't possibly change your DNA, all you can succeed at doing is believing or intending or wanting to be something that you are not. You have an identity, and there's no way to escape from it. You can't get outside of it, even if you want to, and that's the problem. A male is going to be a male pretending to be a female, and a female is going to be a female pretending to be a male. And you are descending into the realm of unreality. And to call this scientific is to conclude in a particular truth. Science cannot be a substitute for a way of life, a culture, or a morality. It can't tell us what we should believe or shouldn't believe. In fact, it seems as if science can no longer even tell us if we're male or female. Of course, I don't believe that. I believe that it can. I believe that it simply shrugs off its responsibility in the face of the changing zeitgeist. And when we follow the human earthly zeitgeist, whatever happens to be popular or at any given moment, this is the madness that we descend into, and basically this is what paganism is. It's a material idea that the world is full of material gods, that there isn't something, a final truth outside and above the world that transcends it and lets us know what our identity is who we are. And the very structure of science itself rests on that foundation, and when that foundation is removed from it, science itself becomes ineffective and useless.
Becomes witchcraft.
It becomes...
just like witchcraft.
It becomes, more witchcraft than science. The belief, and we are descending into that. Of what good is science if it can't be used in conjunction with the truth that it aims at? And that's exactly what we're descending into in this society, is this society without truth. Because science cannot give us truth. It can give us facts, and that's all it does. It can express a relationship between two things. That's what science does. It expresses relationships, and that's all it can do. So it is not something that can look at a unity or a one thing and make anything of it at all, unless it expresses something in a expression or ratio of one thing to another. It has nothing to say. And for people to come out and say that it has been scientifically, their theories have been scientifically proved, is simply a form of boasting based on nothing at all if you really press them.
That's very good points, Bob. It's hard to argue that. I have to agree with you on that. If from a mother's point of view, I don't know how a mother could consent to this. Does she realize what pain and suffering this child's going to have to go through with all these surgeries and the injections and everything else they're going to do to this kid? What mother in their right mind would want to subject their child to it?
Well, the human mind can rationalize anything, and as Anthony Esselin said, Lynn, there are evil people in the world and they will do evil things. And so we already, understand that. But when all of society goes along with it and pretends that this is...
Yeah, the whole society is mad.
Right, then the whole society is descending into a madness. into an inability to understand or recognize reality that it really may have a very difficult time ever recovering from. And this is what happens when we no longer have a religion that is a unity and that it believes in a God that stands outside of the universe, transcends it, and has revealed to us a single truth that is, you know, unbreakable and that we can understand. And that is what built Western civilization, the Catholic Church. And once you step outside of it, and once you become ambiguous, and once you step outside the doctrines of the church that were handed on by Jesus Christ to it and passed down to us, those unbreakable doctrines, and start tinkering around with the idea that you can accommodate the church to society itself, to modern society, then you are engaging in the modern heresy, and I'll get into that just a little bit in the last section here. So we'll transform from that into another article that maybe will bring this to a little bit more complete understanding and a close. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Honey, what are we going to do for Mass this weekend? We'll be out of town and won't be here at our regular Mass time.
Let's go online to check CatholicSpiritRadio.com and find another Mass time. The website lists the regular Mass schedule of all Catholic churches in McLean, Livingston, Logan, DeWitt, Woodford, Ford, and even northwestern Champaign County. It also lists Masses for holy days of obligation, like Christmas and Easter.
Good. We'll easily be able to find another Mass time on CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
I heard that it has a huge list of Eucharistic adoration, too. You won't believe the number of churches that offer it.
That's wonderful. The Eucharist brings me such peace. Are reconciliation times also listed at CatholicSpiritRadio.com?
Yes, and they even have a community calendar that lists local Catholic events. Let's check that out, too.
Thank you, Catholic Spirit Radio. And in a much greater way, thank you, Jesus.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking a little bit about an incident in modern society of so-called transgender, which is very moving and fine example of exactly what happens when we begin to descend into the idea that everything is centered around us and our thoughts and that the truth and reality can be whatever we wish them to be. And I want to talk a little bit more here about the crisis that we're having, and this crisis actually started out with the whole idea of, I think, the Reformation and the idea that there can be somehow or another a separation of church and state. And I think that is what the modern heresy is, this very idea that most people that have taken for granted that there is such a thing as a secular, when that whole idea has only been around for a very short time, and that somehow there's some kind of a clear separation of the secular world from the religious world, and a clear separation of church and state. And I've always said, and I'll say it again, there is no such thing. There never was a separation of church and state. There isn't now, and there never can be. And there is no such thing as the secular. All societies are based on religious principles. Every state has to decide the principles upon which it will rest, and those things are never scientific or secular. Science or any other factual matter cannot give us principles of good or bad, principles of good and evil, principles of should and shouldn't. Those principles don't exist in nature. They don't exist in science. They're not found in the material world, and human beings live and their whole societies revolve around those principles, and at bottom they are always religious, and they can't be avoided. You know, it's an a priori thing, a priori meaning that, you know, before anything else, before the fact, you can't throw it away from yourself. Every time you open your mouth to talk about something, behind whatever you're advocating or not advocating is the idea, this is good or this is bad. this is should or this is shan't. You know, this is what we must do and this is what we must not do. Every society is based on principles like that. Those principles are human, and they don't exist outside the human world. They don't exist among animals. They don't exist among plants. They don't exist in space or the stars or any of the material world that we deal with. They exist only in the human mind. And if that mind is material, then they certainly don't come from the material. So the question is that mind material? And the answer to me is no, it's not. The mind by itself is something other than material. And ultimately, it is in contact with the mind of God. And when that contact is distorted and misused and misrepresented, we descend into exactly that example I was talking about with this James Younger, who is being treated, a little boy, as if he were a girl. And when we descend into this kind of madness, doctors and scientists are ready to actually destroy one of God's children and God's creatures, both body and soul, because they no longer have any truth by which they can sail. And the truth will simply be whatever happens to be popular at any given moment. That is the zeitgeist, the world spirit of the time. And that's what I'm talking about. And in this article here in the same magazine, Catholic Answers, Confronting the Crisis, What the Fathers Teach Us, and the article is talking about the crisis in the church, and it's talking about that there is a split in the church, and the writer of the article, Father Joseph Caggiano, says here, there is a split between the people in the Catholic Church because the church is both human and divine. And he says, if this sounds theoretical, allow me to illustrate it further. There are some who are comfortable with only a divine church, a church where every member is totally converted, where there are no struggles, no weakness, no failures. Such a tendency can forget the redemptive power of forgiveness and mercy. And then he goes on and says, then there are others who want only to celebrate the humanity of the church, thinking that they can build it in their own image or according to their own theology or their own opinion. This forgets that there is a definitive divine mission and truth that is not open to revision. And I can understand what he's saying here, but at the same time, I think that first part, talking about, in effect, he's talking about the difference between those people, like I would consider myself and others as NEWTN, who are dedicated to the sacred tradition of the church, the sacred doctrines that have been handed down from Christ to the apostles and from the apostles to their successors and all the way on down to us, those dogmas that can never be transgressed or broken. They can't be changed to fit modern society. They can't be changed in order to accommodate people with different ideas. They can't be changed just because we decide to interpret Christ as somehow or another accepting everything and loving everyone regardless of who or what they profess. He loved everyone, but to love someone for Christ meant to want the best for them, to want them to be in contact with reality. At any rate, there is that split here that Father Caggiano is talking about. But I would say this dichotomy that he gives us here is a little bit lopsided. That first part, the idea that there are some people in the church who don't recognize weakness and struggles and so forth, I think those kind of people are few and far between. And then there are the traditionalists who simply understand that the dogma must be handed on as is, that it can't be modified or transgressed in order to fit in with modernism. That is the more substantial and solid side. I think the man is simply trying to present a way of being fair, you know, to people of differences. But the point is this has been something that has been going on in Western society and in the church for a long, long time. And I've talked about it before, and I'll talk about it a little bit about it again. And what it is, it's and a perfect example of it is given here by another article in the same magazine, getting all of this from the current issue of Catholic Answers. And that article is by Michelle Arnold, called The Surprising Mission of the Paulists. And it's talking about the differences between two people in early America, two Catholics, when Catholics were very, very few and far between in America. And these were two Catholic intellectuals, and one Catholic intellectuals in America back at that time were even fewer and further between. And it's talking about Father Isaac Hecker, and then also about another Catholic writer who was not a priest, and his name was Orestes Brownson. And Hecker and Brownson at one time both were collaborated in writing literary output about the Catholic Church, and were sort of together on things. And then Brownson began to realize that there was no possible compromising with the, you know, the modern idea that Americanism and Catholicism had significant differences that could never, ever be reconciled. And he understood that this concept of church and state being separated and the idea of religious freedom simply were mythological ideas that couldn't really exist in the real world. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There really is no such thing as religious freedom. There never was, there isn't now, and there never will be. Since all principles at bottom are religious, and every state has to rest on religious principles that it enacts and enforces, there are some things, always religious things, that simply in any given state that are forbidden and that you can't do. In Christianity, for example, at one time, it was forbidden that you could mutilate people. And now it seems like without Christianity, we have new principles coming into existence that you can. And those principles are going to be at war. And if we are traditional Catholics, we're going to find out we are at war with the modern world, or any world that, you know, transgresses those principles. And any society is the same way, whether it's pagan or not. It always has to decide what the laws that it is going to have and is going to rest on. And Father Hecker, who tried to somehow or another conform Americanism and Catholicism, and also the writer Orestes Brownson, who said that it couldn't be done. And I think it's Brownson's statement and conception of what was, you know, of reality that is being clear today, has come out being far more accurate in predicting, you know, the direction that this country is going to go. Brownson came out and said that the democracy or a republic or any form of government could be a good form of government if it has a set of principles outside of itself that transcend the government and the material world itself, such as the Catholic Church, which built Western civilization. He said a country in which those principles held outside by the church and its magisterium and its authority, held outside of the government itself, if the government has to conform to those principles in a sense of what is allowable and not allowable, what is good and what is bad, then any particular form of government could be a good form of government, especially democracy. But once that guiding principle that is outside the government itself, that transcends the government, that is the church, once that is set aside, then there is no guidance by which a government can really govern itself, and its principles simply will be the zeitgeist, that is the world spirit of the day, and they could descend into anything. In other words, it would simply be the rule of the mob, and that is exactly, I think, what is happening to us today. In this article about this little boy, I think, illustrates it, and this idea we have today that somehow Father Hecker and Orestes Brownson can be reconciled is simply, you know, will not hold water. It's not going to happen. I'll read a little bit here from what Orestes Brownson had to say, and I think what he says has been the more accurate. In other words, the modern heresy, for example, that a writer, Hilaire Belloc, for example, and G.K. Chesterton were talking about, the modern heresy is simply this belief that there can be a separation of church and state, this belief that there is going to somehow be a world of secularism without a religion over the top of it to govern it, that everybody can believe whatever they want and still get along at the same time, that somehow there will be all of this tolerance and so forth. I think this whole idea is a fairy tale. It doesn't exist, and you can see it in this article, and you can see it when people, scientists, no longer have any moral basis on which to stand and are willing to go along with mutilating a child because they believe, in effect, that Jesus loved everybody, and even the marginal can somehow or another, the people can change themselves, and that there can be somehow principles which will allow almost everything and anything in existence. So that's, I think, what Brownson was talking about. And he says here, this was written 15 years before the Civil War. Brownson says, the Constitution is a dead letter, except so far as it serves to prescribe the modes of election, the rule of the majority, the distribution and tenor of offices, and the union and separation of the functions of government. Since 1828, it has been becoming in practice and is now substantially a pure democracy with no effective constitution but the will of the majority for the time being. And that's what we're talking about right now. Any man who should plant himself on the Constitution and attempt to arrest the democratic tendency, no matter what his character, ability, virtue, services, will be crushed and ground to powder. The reign of great men, of distinguished statesmen and firm patriots is over, and that of the demagogues has begun. And that's, I think, exactly what is happening here. That is, with the passing of the charismatic founders, the fundamental error of liberalism, that political authority is derived from the people and not from God, was already beginning to prevail. Nor could the Constitution arrest the democratic tendency, since the Constitution, reciting "We the People" as its very source and making no mention of God, could be amended or expediently disregarded by the will of the people as expressed by their elected representatives. No contrivance on paper, no matter how skillfully drafted, could arrest the inevitable course of events. You know, once you descend into that, a democracy detached from anything transcending and above it is a democracy that is set adrift and is bound to be at war with itself and destroy itself. And he goes on, Brownson says, the framers of our government foresaw the evil and thought to guard against it by a written constitution. But they entrusted the preservation of the constitution to the care of the people, which was as wise as to lock up your culprit in prison and entrust him with the key. And that's exactly what it is, meaning that the mob, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the day can change as quickly as overnight, and anything goes.
You can see that today
in
what's going on day to day.
Exactly. And then he says, here then is the reason why Protestantism, though it may institute, cannot sustain popular liberty. It is itself subject to popular control and must follow in all things the popular will. And we got that just talking here about the Methodists, and I'm not picking on them. It's pervasive throughout many
religions. Oh, it's going to be throughout all.
And even in the Catholic Church is being affected by it.
Yes, it is.
We have people at the top, and that's what I think we traditionalists are concerned about, that without dogma and without what's handed on, the boat becomes a raft and floats wherever the winds take it. But anyway, he says, it is itself, that is Protestantism, subject to popular control and must follow in all things the popular will, passion, interest, ignorance, prejudice, or caprice. The Roman Catholic religion, then, is necessary to sustain popular liberty, because popular liberty can be sustained only by a religion free from popular control, above the people, speaking from above and able to command them. And such a religion is only the Roman Catholic religion. And that's where we're at. I've said this before, but this article, I think, brings it home. It's maybe a serious subject to start the year with, but I think it's a good idea to start the year with something like this and understand this is the dichotomy in the church. And who is more accurate in understanding and predicting what will happen? Was it Hecker or is it Brownson? And I think certainly that it was Orestes Brownson. And this is where we're standing, and the most important thing that we can do as Catholics is to understand that we have to protect and guard, just like the fathers of the church did, the tradition that has been handed on to us, and we have to understand that the Catholic Church has the authority to speak that tradition to the rest of society, and that there is no such thing as being able to be governed by a whole number of dominations or a government that can change with the zeitgeist of the times. So at any rate, we'll stop there, and we'll...
God help us.
God help us.
Have mercy on us.
Mercy on us. And in this Christmas season, I hope everyone out there thinks about this. It's a tough, heavy sort of subject maybe, but I think it's something that is going to be addressed, and we're going to have to be aware of it. It's happening all around us, and we need to have a solid answer for it. And I think Orestes Brownson and what he has to say is that answer. So we'll stop there. God bless everybody out there. We'll pray for you. Please pray for us.
St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander to the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.